Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Henry Kissinger famously once said, it may be dangerous to be America's enemy, but to be America's friend is fatal. Qatar and the entire Arab world have learned this reality the hard way. Given the Trump administration's feckless explanation of Israel's unprovoked attack on Qatar, it is fair to say we are living in a new age of barbarism. Crosstalking the new barbarism, I'm joined by my guest, Michael Scheuer, in Virginia. He is a former head of the Bin Laden issue station at the CIA. In Chicago, we have Kathy Kelly. She is an author, activist, and the board president of World Beyond War. And in Tehran, we cross to Mohammed Mirandi. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. I would like to point out to my guests and my audiences that this program is called Return to Barbarism, and I think over the next half an hour, our viewers will agree. Professor Mirandi, let me go to you first here. Last time you were on the program, it was in the wake of the so-called 12-day war with the American and Israeli unprovoked attack on Iran. And I finished the program, and it was like the last 30 or 40 seconds. I said, you'd think that the Gulf countries would start re-examining who their real friends are in the world. And you agreed with me, but then we ran out of time. So that's kind of top of mind here. Who are friends and allies in the what's called the greater Middle East? Because Qatar has learned a very hard lesson. Will it learn from it? I don't know. Your thoughts?
Well, I hope they learn from it, but it's difficult to imagine Qatar and the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Kuwaitis and others changing. They are very obedient. They're bound to the United States. They're completely dependent. All the princes, the elites, they study in the West. They go to the West for vacation. Their understanding of the world comes from the West, and their countries are literally controlled by the West. Former military live in these countries. They control the armed forces. Former intelligence officers help control their intelligence services. In fact, in Qatar, the minority is actually are passport holders. The overwhelming majority of the population are foreigners, mostly slaves and indentured servants, like in the Emirates. If they were smart, they would realize that their real friends are in the region. In fact, when Qatar in particular, when the Saudis and the Emiratis imposed a siege upon them, the only country that came to their aid was Iran. Even though the regime in Doha was supporting ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria and Iraq, but despite that, the Iranians went to their aid. They broke the siege. They helped the country survive under very difficult circumstances. But then after the siege came to an end, they went back to their previous policies, and again, they turned away from Iran. And now we saw how the Israeli regime and the Americans collaborated to carry out this attack, but Qatar has not, so far, has not taken any step to shut down the U.S. base. Because if the U.S. base is not there to support Qatar, then why is it there in the first place?
Why is it there in the first place? I mean, you can't convince me they didn't see everything that was going on. From that base in Qatar, the American military intelligence community can see what's going on around the world, not just in the region. Kathy, let me go to you, because another very important part of this story is the story, the narrative that came out of the White House, basically condemning and condoning the attack at the same time. I mean, it just scrambles your mind trying to figure out what they're saying. Oh, it was unfortunate, but we have to get the hostages back. I mean, American foreign policy, again, has shown that it is only traffics in deception. We have so many examples of this now. The so-called ceasefire attempts in Gaza, they're all fake. The the negotiations with Iran before the attack on January 12th, that was all fake. So why should we believe any story coming out of the White House over this incident? Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I think we've seen a very consistent White House over multiple administrations, which endorses acquisition of other people's precious and irreplaceable resources by using threat and force. And when Israel says it has a right to create greater Israel, it mimics in a way the way that the United States was founded. And we need so much at the United Nations in particular right now, the leadership of countries like Russia, which have, through hard-earned experience, learned the value and the need to try to identify with the people who suffer the most through these atrocities, the people who are forcibly displaced, who are bereaved, who are sickened, who are facing death for their children from snipers and starvation. And to identify with those people will give us a route forward. And I don't see that there's any other way.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And that's what's so dumbfounding about American Zionists. I mean, if you're a Christian, you should take the gospel to heart. But you're not doing that when you look at the destruction of the Palestinians and the death of tens of thousands of children. Michael, let me go to you. I mean, this week alone, Israel has attacked seven countries, Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Tunisia, Qatar, and Yemen. And the only way that is possible is with American backing. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. And, you know, we've fallen prey because of our greed to a country whose flag should be a pirate sign. The Israelis have been nothing but pirates for the entire existence of their country. And there's also no reason to believe that Trump knows all these things before they happen. The suborned bureaucracy, I'm very sure, finds a way to be there.
Michael, does it matter if Trump knew or not?
I don't know. I don't think so. But the problem is, it's more than just a casual problem. It's a problem for a superpower that the bureaucracy has been suborned by the Israelis and is not able to be counted on in any serious way to keep the president up to date on issues that are very important, whether it's Ukraine, the Middle East, the Far East, whatever it is. And there's also the matter of the president's arrogance, which is
Well, Michael, if I can stay with you, I mean, again, you know, listening to what the president of the United States says, that, you know, it's unfortunate he's not happy. We all know his lingo. And then we have the Israeli state coming out and saying, well, it could happen again. I mean, you can't condemn and condone at the same time. I mean, it shows, I mean, when Trump was making that statement, he was a broken man. I mean, he was humiliated. But it continues. Michael.
It's the price of being suborned, sir, whether it's by tens of millions from a lady from Las Vegas or from the dole you get every month from the Israelis for all but one member of Congress. And the idea that somehow the UN can help us on this, the best thing that America could ever do is to boot the UN right out of this country, let it all go to Switzerland. We've messed around after two world wars with international organizations that never work and are really sovereignty suckers. They ruin the country.
Yeah, but to be fair, Michael, on the issue of Israel-Palestine, the United States is the country that is the problem.
I'm not saying anything, and I would disagree with you, sir. But to move it away from us to the UN would just double the problem.
Well, let me go to Mohammed here. Well, maybe just disinvite Israel from the United Nations. Mohammed, let me go to you in Tehran.
Well, as long as the United States is in the UN Security Council, as long as the United States has a right of veto, then the Israeli regime will do whatever it wants. There's no hope for the UN simply because of the structure of the UN Security Council and the fact that the United States and Britain and France, which are not very important countries anymore, Iran is far more important than Britain or France. That's Indonesia, true. India, Brazil, these are the rising powers that are not even included in the UN Security Council. But these two countries are permanent members and they have the right of veto. So I agree that under these circumstances, the UN really is useless. And I think it's really dying. And ultimately, I imagine if things go forward as they seem to be going, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, BRICS, and similar organizations, but these two in particular will probably have more influence on global and regional affairs than the UN.
It's very interesting, as we go to the break, Kathy, it's very interesting that we've seen since the end of the Cold War is that the West has tried to fashion NATO as a new venue for global domination, that the movement to Asia, for example, where we had the last two secretary generals talk about. But Professor Mirandi is right. It's going to be institutions from the global south that are actually going to make its way to have a functioning role that the UN can't. Go ahead, Kathy, before we go to the break.
But these institutions must enforce the sanctions that are already existent, that under international law, every single member of the General Assembly, except for some very small countries, has been trading with Israel, shipping weapons to Israel, floating Israeli bonds. They've all got to implement the laws that already exist. And also the Uniting for Peace mechanism is a possibility. If a veto is issued in the Security Council, it's possible for the General Assembly to bypass, overturn that veto, and it's possible that they could then suspend Israel from the United Nations, enforce the economic measures, and move toward eventually setting up some kind of protection.
And that will take a lot of political will. And then in the second part of the program, I want to talk about how the liberal order has been completely destroyed by those that embrace Zionism. But in the meantime, we're going to go to a break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the new barbarism. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the new barbarism. Okay, let's go back to Michael in Virginia. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we had Tony Blinken talking about the rules-based order, and Professor Mirandi has been on a number of programs where we dissected that phrase. We don't hear it very much anymore, which is, you know, I appreciate that. But what they called the rules-based order has been actually just completely deconstructed and destroyed. Over this issue of Palestine-Israel, the West does not live up to any of its values. It has actually rejected the Enlightenment, which so many of the ideas of the Enlightenment the world has embraced now. The West is really folded on this issue. It's abhorrent, it's disgusting, and it's unforgivable. Michael.
Yeah, well, I think so. We were this country was birthed by the Scottish Enlightenment. And we ignore all of that now because they're white men or slave owners or some other damn thing. But, you know, this is really I don't think the world realizes the absolute uselessness of the American education system.
Yeah.
We have presidents who come to power who don't know where countries are in the world. We have presidents who are and congressmen and senators who don't listen to anybody. They don't listen to what the opponent or the ally says. The United States lives in the moment in a complete state of chaos because of that, because they have no sound beliefs. They don't know where we came from. They don't know what our history says. And as a result, they flounder. And I don't know if there's a way to stop that or not before we collapse.
Well, I mean, it's certainly, if I go to Professor Mirandi right now, I mean, this is the reason why I'm calling it the return to barbarism. I mean, I'm asked very often, Peter, why do you talk so much about this? I'm trying to save my own soul. I have to do something. I have to say something. If I physically can't stop this, I have to raise up my voice. That's why we do these programs, because the values of the Enlightenment are something to cherish, okay? And they're all being destroyed by the people that claim to uphold them. Professor.
Yes, and what is even more disturbing is that they're doing it in front of a global audience, and they've been doing it for 2 years now. This is very different from the genocides of past, where we learn about it in history books or we hear about it, like in Rwanda, in news reports that come in a couple of days later. But here today, now we wake up with new images of dead children. We go to bed with more images of dead children. We wake up the next morning with bodies ripped apart on our social media. This is what's unprecedented. And then you literally see mainstream or legacy media journalists trying to justify this, try to condone this, or politicians being apologetic.
Mohammed, if I could just interrupt real quickly, we had the Reuters news agency lying about the death of one of its own employees two weeks ago in Gaza. I mean, their own employee or stringer, and they don't even—
And their own camera.
Their own camera.
That's right. And the Associated Press, at the same time, wouldn't name the journalist, the lady who was also killed. Their journalist was killed. They did not give her name in their statement. Reuters, on the other hand, basically repeated the Israeli regime accusations about its own reporter and its own camera, which was giving live feed for Reuters. So that's how it is. So the journalism today, the mainstream journalists, not many of the heroes that you and I know in alternative media, not all alternative media, but mainstream media is basically a part of this genocide. And this is what's different. It's being carried out in front of our eyes, and we're being told not to believe what we're seeing.
Well, Kathy, if I can go to you in Chicago here, I mean, if we look at the approach that the United States specifically, but most of the Western world follow because they're pliant, they have they no longer have any kind of moral standing. Western audiences are told that negotiations are now just a exercise in deception. What Israel and the United States do, they play a tag team. I mean, you know, I didn't hear about it. All of this, they can't even get their story straight, okay? And then the Qataris said, yeah, they told us 10 minutes after it happened, okay? I mean, they can't even keep their story straight. Kathy.
Well, I think about young people today who are quite idealistic and might want to go into medicine or go into journalism or become people who would be part of relief operations. And to make those decisions now would be almost to place a target on your back.
Yeah.
If you live in Gaza or the West Bank, for instance. And so this policy that says, kill the messengers, kill the reporters, and hide the evidence is as Michael said in the beginning, it's a reversion to piracy and to gang mentality. And I think that it is likely to diminish people's interest in being involved in civil service and being involved in world affairs. And so there's a great need to turn that around. But I would not give up on the United Nations and the 38 agencies of the United Nations that operate all over the world. The need, I believe, is for major countries in the BRICS coalition to start taking a lead that takes a bit more risk within the United Nations and asserts much more demand that Israel not be tolerated, not be included. And we saw with South Africa, eventually Mandela became the president of South Africa.
Well, Michael, we do, I think it's widely believed, and that's one of the reasons why we have Professor Morandi on so often, is that Israel, with the backing of the United States, is contemplating another attack on Iran. It's really quite amazing. The IAEA wants that, you know, wants to have negotiations again. But we know the last time they were involved in this, they knew that an attack was being planned. And because Israel has impunity at just attack Qatar and six other countries this week, we should fully expect that Iran is still a target for the Israelis. Michael.
I absolutely agree. I think you can count on the Americans to do whatever the Israelis want for as long as they want to do it. The Congress is on the take. The bureaucracy is on the take. The president appears to be on the take. It's hard to believe, but he took an awful lot of money from them. So, you know, what are you going to do, though, with the West at the moment? No one says anything about the UN or about the United States or Britain, who staged this COVID thing for the world and killed more people than Hitler, maybe even more people than Stalin or Mao with their virus. Now, if you don't attack that problem, where do you really find a footing? If the government of the United States has been intent through immigration and other things to kill the United States, why look at us for anything?
Well, Michael, this is this perennial question, is that the wag the dog analogy here. I mean, what does the United States get out of this? I mean, again, you know, Donald Trump is a very proud egomaniac, but he's crushed when he has to cover for Israel. You could see it in his body language here. What does the United States get out of it?
Well, I don't think General Washington said he always worried about the Americans being too avaricious and that would derail their republic or derail their republic. And I think we're looking at that, sir. I think it's money. I think it's a false allegiance to a memory of 1945. And I think we live in the cult of 1945, of World War II, that we think we're still dealing all the cards and own all the cards. And there's no way out of it that I can see it at present. To expect help from the United States on this issue particularly is to pipe dream.
Well, Professor Morandi, it's no wonder that in the wake of the summits that we saw in Asia, particularly in Beijing, and I'm thinking about the Shanghai Organization, Cooperation Organization, I mean, they are taking the lead. There's a lot of infrastructure they have to deal with. It's called dealing with the American dollar, and that's a very tough nut to crack. But I see it on the horizon. I definitely see it on the horizon, and it's a positive alternative.
Yes, I agree completely. And you sort of see how BRICS is becoming more like the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is becoming more like BRICS. Yeah. And the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was initially more a security-oriented body. Now it's becoming increasingly economic. Right. And of course, BRICS is also becoming more broad in scope, and that is because of the behavior of the United States, because of the behavior of the West in general, and that they feel that they have to take a different direction. All the financial institutions are being used as weapons. The dollar is being used as a weapon. International bodies are being weaponized. The International Atomic Energy Agency was weaponized to wage war against Iran. So that's basically marginalizing the United States.
One parting thought here. I'm going to stay with the professor here. Now I think Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize because he's bringing the global South together. I think he should be awarded for doing that. Your quick thought on that, 30 seconds.
He's done more than any other U.S. president, although others have done a lot to push the world in this direction, but he's done more than any other. And the Israeli regime has done more than any entity to destroy the credibility and reputation of the entire West, the collective West, because the world is blaming the Israeli regime for the Holocaust in Gaza, but also the collective West for supporting it.
No lies detected there. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Chicago, Virginia, and in Tehran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.